Welcome back, everyone. You have made it through a long 2 days. How many hours has this been? You know, maybe 16 hours? I don't know. Something like that. You may have guessed, this doesn't look anything like Andy at all.
Not even close. I hope.
Say hi, Teresa.
Hi, everybody. Time to grab a cup of coffee if you haven't already, and stay awake for just a little bit longer. Bear with us.
Yes. Do you want to tell them about yourself or anything? Or
sure.
Sure.
I am Teresa Greiner. I work with CADM, and what I do is I usually help escalations, but even more so than that, I have a consumerization background. So working a lot with consumer and social, and particularly applications.
Excellent. Well, we're all about apps and social and consumers and BYOD. Yes. All right. So we're going to talk about this is going to be a crazy topic because it just doesn't seem like it belongs in this appified 2-day session. But we're going to talk about the mobile web, and because the mobile web is a critical element. We have this incredible web browser on our device, and you might as well make use of it. So without further ado, let's just dive right in. So kind of what we're going to cover in this session, I'm going to talk about some mobile web. Actually, I'm not going to talk about the mobile web facts. Teresa's going to talk about them because there are important things you need to know. Then I will go into some mobile web best practices. And then we're going to talk about how you can leverage the new HTML5 capabilities of IE10 in building these enterprise apps. And then I just kind of want to leave you here with something very enterprise-like, since I just did an enterprise session. If you believe Gartner, they think that 80% of all mobile applications will be developed, will either be web-oriented, mobile web, or a hybrid. And remember, a hybrid app is a native app with the web browser control on it. And so the content is all HTML5 and JavaScript. So something to think about. You know, we have that pendulum. I think the web has been dominating the world since it got hot in the 90s, right? And then we've had this app thing that's been happening with mobile devices, you know, over the last decade or so. But the web is, as I go out with customers, I'm watching that mobile web start to creep back across. I see it in hybrid apps. Anybody who's used Facebook or LinkedIn or Twitter on your iPhone or Android or any other platform, you notice those are actually all hybrid apps. So anyway, it's a big deal. It's a big deal for the enterprise, too.
Oh, it's huge, and it's something to take in consideration. So I'm a little bit more of a marketing background. I know I'm going to sound a little bit foreign to all of you out here from what you've heard today. But what's really critical to understand is a little bit of the why behind of what you're doing. So you're out there, you're thinking applications. What do I need to do? How do I need to look at it? And these stats are really critical and important for you to pay attention to, because the mobile web is critical. But it's not only utilizing it, it's how you're utilizing this information. It's thinking ahead of time. So here's an example. What if I said to all of you out there, grab a piece of paper, scratch paper, anything next to you, and start drawing out an idea of an application that would utilize the mobile web? The first person to drop ink on paper, I would say you're out of the game. Because if you're not thinking, if you don't have empathy for the end user, you have failed before you even started building. So if you think that you can hurry up and race to the answer on this, you're not being consultative. And then you become one of the many out there. For those of you who are building either for Microsoft, outside of Microsoft, within, however you're deciding to use your talents, if you are not taking highly into consideration the actual scenarios of what you're using and how you're using them, you're actually taking disadvantage of yourself and also your customer, your client. Really critical to understand. And then another fact that Rob and I were sort of joking about the other day is that complex anybody can do. Simple is what you pay for. Your job is to think of what's critical. Your job is to think about what's important, how people will be using it. And what I mean by that is, like I said earlier, if you start writing on the paper too fast, hold on. If you're building a retail app, close your eyes for a second. Put yourself in the middle of the store. Who's your end user? Is it a woman pushing a child? On the other hand, there's a latte and her mobile phone's leaning on her shoulder, and then she has to hurry up and check something. Think of the scenarios in which you're building. Be consultative. And the whole critical point is simplicity. I think we're all seeing that today.
Absolutely.
Not being afraid of leaving white space, not being afraid of allowing the app to breathe. People are overwhelmed. How do you make it simple for them to do what they do? And I hate to say this, if they have to think, you've already lost them.
There you go. So look at all these interesting mobile web kind of factoids that we're seeing today. You know, the fact that it's growing faster than the desktop web did. When the desktop web was taking off back in the 90s, it's just highly accelerated over that, and it's going to surpass it by 2015. the fact today, you know, when you think about apps versus the web, you know, your apps are going to address however many people have bought devices so far. Mm-hmm. The mobile web is going to be able to reach, you know, over half of the global population, maybe more than that, actually. Isn't that interesting factoid? Just think, the web browser itself, it's the number one app on a phone as far as usage by people, and accounting for so much of that traffic.
I think also, I mean, I'm looking at also at these factoids, and one of the ones that really stands out to me is that 9 of 10 mobile shoppers are using the mobile web while in the store.
While in the store, isn't that amazing?
And we were joking about that the other day. I was trying on clothes in a dressing room, and after a while, of course, they think that you may have died in there, so they're checking in on you. And what they didn't know is that I had my new Nokia Lumia in my hands, nice big screen. I'm in there on the mobile web, cross-checking all the items I'm trying on, and I realized that everything that I wanted to buy was 50% off across the street at Nordstrom. So when I came out, I said, hey, we've got a problem. And I show them my phone. And they say, well, we don't match prices. Really? In this day and age, huge mistake by a retailer. But that's not your problem.
Huge mistake.
The reality is that we have the ability to see where and what we want to buy. Matter of fact, I didn't even have to waste my time crossing the street. I could have just, if the app were built better than it were, I could have just tapped a couple of boxes and said, ship them to my home. See it tomorrow.
Absolutely.
So it's really, really changing. And one of the things that I love about that particular factoid is when we start to think on the next page of the mobile web facts that you have, is that don't just think about it as that 9 out of 10 people are using it while they're shopping and how many people are really using it. But this is what I want you to think about. How much are they spending? Because at the end of the day, that's what the retailer's looking at. Is this app a success to me? How much product is it moving? How much money is it moving?
Absolutely.
And so it's not just the 9 out of 10 mobile shoppers are using it. They're actually making purchases while they're walking through the store. They're purchasing on their phone. And when we see the money coming through on that, I think it's drastic. It's not what you would think it would be. It's not just this little minuscule dot. It's not just me searching prices across the street, which they don't get to tally into your app. So they're not going to tally in those residual purchases that come because you did such a great research tool for me. But when you start to see the money that accumulates out of this, it's actually a pretty big number.
And you know, kind of why we're saying this to you, I know we're kind of getting not very techy right now, which is fine because this is important. There's the why. Why do you care? Why would you care about the mobile web? I get why you care about apps, the big app gold rush that's been going on across platforms. I totally understand why you want to do that and monetize apps. What we're trying to get across to you is the importance of the mobile web. And obviously, we have an amazing platform to bring that to life. And so these factoids, these are the kind of the drivers to tell you about the opportunity that's out there. You know, the fact that 51% of mobile research that a person's doing, like you in the dressing room, has led to a purchase. That's a giant opportunity in retail, an underserved market in mobile websites. And if all 9% of all retail e-commerce sales in quarter two of 2012 came from phones and tablets,
And this is the one I love. Nearly 1 in 10 e-commerce dollars are spent via mobile devices.
Isn't that amazing?
That's huge. And the reason also I think that it's really important for you to hear this information, again, not as techie, maybe giving your brain a little bit of a pause and a break here, but how to differentiate yourself in this world when you're up against a lot of people who might be able to do what you do is if you have that extra spoke in your arsenal, and that is to be able to be consultative. The ability to sit there with the customer and advise them. I used to work and build apps. I used to be on the team. I can't code. I rely on people like you to do what I really, really hope will come out at the end. But you really need to understand that the experience, so we're talking about now the data, but let's go one step beyond that. The experience people are having, look at this, a 1 second increase in load time results in 11% fewer page views. Look at the decrease in not being satisfied. And let's make it even one step worse. I hate to give you all the bad news at once, but that is, build a terrible app and they're not going to come back in a week to see if you made changes. You see somebody else already built that other app. It's really important for you to look. What are the top used retail apps? What are the top used apps in the category that I want to write in? And then start to take some look at them. Look at the UI. Look at how it feels. Look at how it loads. Because if you're not starting to think, again, in the eyes of the end user, you're going to build for nothing. And that's not the goal here. The goal is for you to be able to have a steady journey in building, and a steady journey in building better each time. But people today are not as forgiving. And even if you're thinking about building enterprise apps, not just consumer-level apps, because I know we're talking here a lot about consumer and retail.
Sure, certainly.
Do not think they're any different. it's over with. There isn't a consumerization blur anymore. There's no blur. The people working in offices using applications and tools, building to perhaps have an internal sales opportunity, are the same people who go home and choose which application to use when they get home. Keep that in mind. Don't think, well, this is an enterprise app. I can kind of lean back on this one and be more technical and push more into the page. No, you can't. There's a lot of proof on that, too. People test out of training tools. People test out of things. People just fill things in wrong just to get past the page.
Absolutely.
I'm not saying we ever would do that. We don't do that. We would never do that.
But when you think about the kind of scare tactics here, you know, so you see the opportunity. You see how more and more people are using the mobile web to buy things online. Retail is obviously the best example we have. Obviously, people use mobile web sites for news and for flights and checking the reservations and things like that. But if you see, contrast that with the fact, and I'll have a stats for the United States, but only 4% of retailers actually have a mobile website.
It's crazy.
So there's your opportunity right there. It is massive. There's this pent-up demand. You're seeing the closure rate by retailers who do have mobile websites and the fact that nobody's got them. So it's a huge opportunity. And then the scared stuff, when you contrast that, the W3C just came out like 6 months ago and said, wow, we can't believe it. The average web page now is 1 meg in size. That's insanity. These complex, beautiful, gorgeous websites, that is not going to fly on mobile devices, on tablets. So you need to go back down. And that's kind of what Teresa was alluding to, this 1 second increase in load time. These users are expecting it to be 3 seconds. And when they're not, when it's loading this giant, they just leave.
Well, and who do I blame? Do I blame my phone or the app? Because it also could be the network. You unfortunately are surrounded by so many different parts of the pie, right?
Right.
So sometimes I'm getting frustrated at the app, and I'm like, come on, is there something wrong with my computer? Hold on. But it could be Comcast network is down, or wherever I'm being,
wherever
I'm working on. But people, 9 times out of 10, sadly will blame the app. So if you are building an application that has the tendency or is an enabled to have these issues because it is 1 megabyte, if not more.
Yeah.
Go figure. You're not helping yourself in any way.
So assume the worst. When you're building, build for the worst. Build for GPRS. Build for no connectivity, intermittent connectivity. And so make that tiny web page when you're doing this. So let's take a look about, you know, we've got some of these mobile web best practices here. And maybe you can kind of, speak to this. I mean, when you think about what the mobile web should be, most of you have probably seen mobile versions of sites, of news sites. Right here, I've got the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. This is an example of a user-friendly, kind of glance-and-go, you know, efficient, lightweight website. So it's mostly text. It's not elaborate graphics and everything. It's not us trying to build our giant page and squeeze it onto that device, like customers always ask to do. It's just scrolling vertically up and down. You're not moving around. Minimal graphics. It's just a column, and it loads lickety-split. And then contrast that with this view here. Now, you might say, well, wow, that's impressive. Internet Explorer is showing the full websites of both those pages in all their glory. That's what we all do to show you how amazing our browser is. It doesn't mean it's a good idea, though, for what you should deliver to your...
This is so first year of mobile apps. What I'm looking at is, if I were to see an app that looked like this, it would say to me, you stopped cleaning up your site how many years ago?
Right.
I mean, this really tells me you... It's like what they say, what is it? If you get a tattoo on your face, this is where you say, I've decided my life has ended. This is it right here. This is my moment right here. That's the tattoo on the face piece of material right there. And you're totally right. Here's another thing. We are sitting in a generational... I'm going to give you some more marketing data. You're sitting in a generational skew of the largest amount of teenagers and the largest amount of senior citizens at the same time. So, two things... highly distracted teenagers, and then the other side, I need my readers for this, and I still can't read the page. So again, you have screens. So a lot of us, because we love our devices, may have the larger mobile phone screens, but do not estimate everybody to be on that larger screen size. Not everybody is. So like Rob was saying, always prepare for the worst. Prepare to build for the smaller smartphone screen size because it's just going to be a luxury when it gets on the bigger one. But trying to squish everything in, again, like I said earlier, is that simple is critical. The average person is playing with your app with the brain level of a 10-year-old. I used to work for Coca-Cola. We used to call that, if we didn't build everything cartoon simple, what the heck were you thinking? And it's not because people aren't smart. I don't mean that. But while you're even sitting listening to us right now, you're thinking, am I hungry? Do I have time to get water? Wow, I need to run to the restroom. You are not engaging at 100%. And that's just reality. So that's another thing. When you're building and you're thinking simple, hand it to a 10-year-old. And I'm not saying your 10-year-old who likes to write code next to you. I'm talking about the 10-year-old down the street that's still trying to figure out how to be a 10-year-old. And see how they can engage with it. Do they need an instruction manual? Can they read this with their eyes with noise going on and somebody yelling for them? Again, always imagine the scenario that the person will be in. Again, walking through a store, latte in hand, pushing a kid, somebody yelling to me, phone on my shoulder, and now what do you want me to do? Your goal at the end is to complete the goal of your client, and your client's goal is, how much money is this app making for me? And like I mentioned earlier, don't just think the front end of this. I'm thinking the back end of the retail site. Both should be easily 10-year-old readability.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so whether you're building apps, like we've talked about earlier in the last couple of days, for yourself to make money, or as we've talked about with the enterprise, you're going to have customers, or you work for an enterprise and you're building apps for them, and now we're just talking about the web, you're going to be building websites for retailers and other people like that. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be your driver for income. And so these are great things to think about, because this is a disaster, trying to fit so much stuff on a screen. And it's hard to, not only is it hard to read and everything like that, but you know, what's a web browser? It's a text parser. And when you have to parse that much text from the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, it's just going to take forever to do it. And so that slows down that user experience. People mm-hmm. just start getting impatient. They already maybe had to wait too long on the network.
You just gave me time to think, and guess what? I'm already on the other site.
Absolutely.
I'm gone.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So let's move ahead and get a little geekier. So mobile markup. Let me just quickly talk about what's changed. You might be surprised to know that the current recommendation from the W3C for building mobile websites is this thing called XHTML Basic 1.1 Second Edition. Doesn't that sound like a Microsoft product from years ago? You know, like
we're only on second edition?
Windows 98 SE or something like that. You know, something, you know. So anyway, that's actually the current recommendation, believe it or not. It's great for feature phones, your flip phones, things like that. You can now feel free, though, to use HTML5 on smartphones. I know you read lots of things wondering how well or not so baked HTML5 is. I'm going to show you the stuff that's really baked in, particularly on IE10 on our phone that you can use. And so when you're doing that, you're going to be targeting IE10, obviously, on our phones and tablets, and WebKit for all other platforms and all of WebKit's names. And, you know, not to go into anything here, but this is kind of like your boilerplate of this XHTML basic thing. This looks really old school. It reminds me of the late 90s. Look how much cleaner and simpler HTML5 is, the boilerplate, you know, just as your starting point to build this web page. So super simple. So to get to where Teresa wants us to get with these lightweight, fast, you know, easy glance-on-the-go informational apps, let's just run through some mobile web best practices, and I'll kind of describe what they are. So top align form fields. What I mean by that is if you're, you know, maybe you've built apps in the past and you have a first name text box and a last name and you have a label to the side of it. You just won't be doing that anymore. You put the first name label on top of the text box. And then so you always stack everything vertically. Don't assume this kind of right to left scrolling. You don't ever want to have to scroll. Someone should just be able to get their thumb and just go up and down. Separate CSS, your cascading style sheets and JavaScript files. Don't embed those in the actual web page, even though you can. And the reason for that is even though you take that initial hit, it's all about performance and speed, right? So that first web page is going to download the separate CSS and JavaScript files as separate files, but then all these subsequent web pages are going to use those existing ones that are now cached on your phone. And so that's going to speed up the performance as opposed to putting all that data inside each page, which is going to kill your performance. Reduce the need for text input. This is not just a mobile web thing. This is also an app thing. But any, you know, you talked about it's easy to build complex and whatever, and they pay you the big bucks to make it simple. Anybody can put just tons of text boxes and say, I need you to fill out all this data, free form. Well, it's awful hard to do on a phone. You know, I just can't imagine. You've all been to a big web page where you had to fill out a zillion fields on a form, then hit submit, you know, and God forbid something goes wrong and you're halfway done and then it blows up on you and then you're like, oh, I gotta start.
How many times do you have to type in your little credit card number
yes.
and squint while you're trying to read it as you're typing it in?
So on your phone, what you want to do, whether you're building an app or you're building a mobile website, instead of text input, give people choices and decisions to make. So use combo boxes, use lists, use radio buttons. Give them choices, this or this. Choose these options. Don't make me freeform text anything unless I absolutely have to. So just choice, choice, choice. So I'm just like, yep, that, submit, you know, that kind of thing. That's what you want to go for. And that applies to apps as well. Again, I kind of said stack everything in a single column so you don't scroll vertically. The top 20%, Teresa and I have talked about this from the big desktop. I'll talk to customers and they want to put their whole giant mega website all onto the phone. Oftentimes it's like, you know, there's, you know, we talk about the airline example. Am I going to book a reservation on my phone? Not all the time. Maybe never. Maybe you will, though. But the most common things, you think about the top 20% most common use cases. I probably just need to quickly say, oh, is my flight late? Or, you know, things like that.
And if I want to book a flight, that doesn't need to be at the top, as he's saying. That could be an option. I could go into more, and then I can go into there and see if that's available. Because we kind of joke about, are you going to write a PowerPoint, for example, on that small screen? I'm going to do it if I'm in an emergency at an airport and I am in big trouble by my boss, right?
Sure.
But there's no other reason for me to go to that level of complexity on that screen. Does that mean it has to be there? No. Your job, as he's saying, is to simplify. Your job is to figure out, how am I using this device? Why am I using it in the scenario I would be using it? And again, educating the people that you're consulting, because you're going to be sitting there and have a major retailer argue with you that the entire kitchen sink needs to be on that homepage. You need to explain to them why not.
Absolutely. Another good little performance tip is minifying your HTML cascading style sheets in JavaScript. If you don't know what that is, when you write normal code for apps, you can have white space all over the place and it just gets compiled out and it doesn't make any difference. Well, it counts against you on the web. All that white space is data size, believe it or not. And so there's some tools. I think we have some tools in the new Visual Studio. There's some excellent tools you can download off the web that'll actually compress and put all that stuff together. And so it goes from looking fancy to all wrapping text over and over. And it looks horrible. But what it does is it probably saves you 30% in the size of the page, which means it's going to load faster. What else do we have here? Advertisements. Obviously, people want to monetize the big web and they want to monetize the mobile web. Just use the lightest weight, you know, 1K, whatever, 2K advertisements, and work with the advertisers to make sure they're optimized, because they're going to be delivering it to your mobile web page from a different location than where yours is coming from.
And keep an eye on that industry. There is a lot of research going into this right now that mobile operators are looking into, that you can pay to be advertisement free. And this is something that you'll probably be seeing coming up in the very near future, that there's the discussion on how you pay for your phone. There's kind of controversy about this. Would my mobile phone bill be free every month if I accept advertising versus if I want to be advertising free? So keep an eye on that. That's a moving target right now, but it's probably going to be fleshed out in the next year or two.
Fun. Here's another one. Put the JavaScript at the bottom of the page, just before the closing body tag. Typically, you put it up in the head, but guess what? A page is parsed, you know, in a top-down fashion. And so if you have giant JavaScript, it's going to stop and parse that and then go finish the rest of your site. So this is just kind of perception for the user. If the JavaScript's at the bottom of the page, the whole page will load instantly, and then the JavaScript will load in the background. They won't even know it. Search engine optimization is what we're all obsessed with when we're building big and little websites. So have that link on the bottom of your mobile site to your big, large desktop site, which helps in SEO because those external links going. And then vice versa, have your desktop be pointing to your mobile site. Short URLs, I think that goes without saying. We don't want things going off the side of the page. We want it to fit in this narrow screen. So that's kind of a duh, isn't it? Here's a real key thing. Have every page, and this applies to apps too, it should provide a single function or idea. We kind of talked about, I remember in the 90s, people building apps for the desktop, you know, in VB, Power Builder, Delphi, and they would cram like 100 controls on one screen. It's like mission control at NASA. I want to have everything on here. It's going to be awesome. And that was the big thing back then. Today, we talk about our design language, fierce reduction, get rid of the Chrome. It's just the content. Waste space. Have whatever page you're on, have it just be about one simple thing. Not try to cram in 100 little things that I'm going to do on here. If that means you're wasting space and there's a lot of white space, that's okay.
Greatness.
Don't worry about it. Make everything bigger, waste space. Always have one functional idea. Don't try to confuse somebody by having multiple concepts happening on the same page. Use web server compression. So you can turn on compression in IIS for both dynamic and static pages. And so, you know, Andy spent a lot of time showing you how you did compression from his OData services. This is a big deal. This all helps. We're all working to this one goal. All right, back to the user experience. Use larger fonts. Sounds silly. I used to think, oh, maybe I better use smaller fonts so I could cram more stuff on the screen because the screen is so dang small. Do the opposite. Be counterintuitive to what your gut's telling you. Waste the space. Use larger fonts so I can see it so I don't have to put on reading glasses.
Don't make me zoom in and out 10 times on
exactly.
my device, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Design for the giant 80-pixel finger, not for a stylus. So don't put tiny buttons, tiny links, tiny everything that you've got to click on that you assume a finger's going to work on. You know, exaggerate the size. So you're going to make larger fonts, larger buttons, larger everything. Anything that's touchable element, make it larger than normal. If it works for the finger, it's automatically going to work for the stylus. So
well,
you get that for free.
Well, and also with the stylus, I mean, again, let's start thinking about it. Again, who's your end user? Walking through the store, I've got my coffee in one hand. Again, I'm talking about Seattle, but I've got my coffee in one hand. I may have something in the other hand. I may or may not have a kit. And now I've got to find my stylus?
Absolutely.
I'm supposed to find my stylus? Where's my stylus? Anybody's going to start using their finger right there on the spot.
Sure, absolutely. But anyway, you get the stylus for free if you target the finger. But if you target for the stylus, you don't get the finger. It just doesn't work that way.
I don't want the finger.
Yeah, say people don't, yeah. Touchable elements, so 40 pixels high and wide. And then just as important as how far apart they should be. This is back to wasting space. We've all heard the term fat finger. If I have two buttons that are too close together, I might accidentally hit them both at the same time. So spread them apart, waste space. Bigger, farther apart, larger fonts. Simple, single idea. Navigation should always be at the top of the page. Usually that's what I see normally anyway with cookie crumbs, breadcrumbs. But putting it at the bottom, the user may never find it, you know, because it's scrolling down to oblivion. All right, here's a real controversial thing. Dun, 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 dun. Anyway, keep pages under 20K. I know that sounds like the impossible dream. The W3C saying that the average page is now 1 megabyte. That's quite a bit larger than 20K. You know, think of the simplest web page that you can think of in your mind that just has a text box on it for search. I'm not going to say what it is. Use that as your guidepost, your North Star when you're building mobile web. If you shoot for a site that's under 20K each page, it's going to load so fast. It's just going to be insanely fast, you know. Because remember what the people were bouncing. You know, if they want it to be in 3 seconds, they are out of there if it's 5 or 7 seconds. And you may not get another chance.
Oh, they're your competitor. They're
absolutely.
Not, they're gone. I mean, they're buying at the other store. It's over with.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, luckily, we're giving you some interesting market insight right now because a whole lot of people who aren't watching this are not aware that this is a big deal. And they're going to keep building bloated, heavy web pages that are taking too long and people are going to bounce. Your people are not going to bounce. And your customer is going to thank you.
Well, not only that, your customer is going to tell everybody else how great you are, and then you're going to have too many customers,
there you
hopefully.
Go. Word of mouth. Mm-hmm. There you go. Can't beat that. Cache control. You can do cache controls on your web pages. You can emit that from the server side in ASP.NET if you want. But anyway, you can do that to reduce the number of HTTP requests that are happening as it happens. So all this is just about speeding up or reducing extraneous stuff. Images only when absolutely necessary, and they need to be tiny, tiny, tiny. Unless the whole point of the page is to show you an image. Still try to make it as light as possible. But, Teresa, you were talking to me about shopping on a particular website for clothing, and they changed it, right? And they made the images for
smaller. They decided, wow, so people apparently, when one is shopping sometimes on a website, and let's say I type in coats, I'm going to get all these images, little squares of coats. Well, this particular company, for some reason, the way they've built their web area is that they decided to put all these images but make them smaller. So now I can't even see the images. I can increase the size of the screen, but then it starts moving off the screen and on the screen, and now you've just made my user experience dreadful. So what do? I go to the other site. I can look up the exact same codes at another retailer. Why would I shut down that page to go all the way back to buy it? I ended up doing all my shopping on the other site.
Absolutely.
And now when I think about going back to the other site, really, do I want to? I would love to say I have the best eyes in the world, but even if you have the best eyes, if you're not making it cartoon simple and easy, it's not enjoyable. And start thinking again. I know we all work in enterprise and we think from the standpoint of what we have to use because we use tools all day long, but the people in the consumer world don't have to. They can go where they want to.
That's right. So,
freedom.
You know, if we think back to the 90s when we started doing e-commerce, I mean, what is e-commerce? It's a projection of a store.
Mm-hmm.
And the store wants to, you know, short of you coming into the store where you can actually see and hold the product, the blender you want to buy, the coat you want to buy, they have to do their best job on the web to say, have we given you a good enough representation of this object to get
exactly.
you to buy it here rather than come into the store?
And let's think from Gen Y standpoint. And for those of you who are maybe into or not into the generational studies, Gen Y, all they worry about is, what do you think about me? And so when a site does this, subconsciously what you're saying to people is, I do or I don't care about you.
Yeah.
And Gen Y, zero forgiveness, zero forgiveness. Maybe some of the older generation will be like, maybe I just don't know how to use this right. But zero forgiveness.
There you go. It's all about zero forgiveness. All right. Server-side capability, databases, there's this Werfel thing, and we have some things in Visual Studio that basically can give you detection of what the database, the device capabilities are. Client-side capability detection can happen via JavaScript. You can detect what a browser can do dynamically with JavaScript. Use the viewport tag. So the difference when you saw the new site, the big one and the small one, part of that was using the viewport tag that automatically resized it and said, hey, this is designed for an 800 by 480 screen, not a 1980 by 1080 or whatever, 1920, something like that. So use the viewport tag. So let's go quickly through some worst practices. Don't use frames. Don't use plugins anymore. Don't use image maps. These are things that no one uses anymore anyway. Don't use tables to do your layout for your pages. You know, and obviously not tables with hiding within table data and table rows. Hovering and mouse overs don't work on browsers on devices anyway because you're touching them. So that's just a big waste of time. Don't have background images where the image takes up the whole web page. That's just huge and it's hard to read. Pop-up windows are a no-no. It goes without saying. Absolute values for measuring distances between things. It might have worked if you could define the size of the screen on a desktop, but it goes out the window. You don't know what the size of the device is. So everything needs to be relative. Use M's and things like that. Don't use an image for a submit button or icons for links or things like you've done in the past because you want it to look cool. Use the native button. Whichever mobile device you have, it'll give it the look and feel of a native app for that. Transcoding. You may not have ever heard of this. Back when we had feature phones and we brought the internet to feature phones, mobile operators all over the world put in these servers, these transcoders, they were all throughout the internet, to take a big web page and put it through a meat grinder and give you the slimmed down version of it so you could read it on your little feature flip phone. Oh, wow, I've got the internet on my phone. So this is right after WAP pages. Well, guess what? These transcoders are still, they weren't taken out of commission. They're all over the internet. So when you're building mobile web pages, you don't want to risk having a transcoder mess with your page. So you can put in a cache control header and say no transform so it leaves your page intact when it's going through. Don't have, kind of like the advertisements, don't have too many linked resources because you can't control the speed of where they are coming from. Don't do client-side redirecting. Don't have too big of a DOM. You've seen how some mobile web apps you've seen where it just keeps appending and appending and appending to oblivion, how they get slower and slower because the bigger the DOM gets, the slower it gets. All right, so let's jump into the heart of this thing. Let's talk about IE10 and HTML5 for building apps on our new platform. So HTML5, you probably hear what you think it is and what it's not and whatever. It's not quite as monolithic as you might think. It's giant. It's zillion working groups all beating each other up to fight over their feature. And so there's parts that are actually truly part of HTML5, but some... when the ones I'm going to focus on are in this section called web apps. And you can see the red, yellow, green, things like that. That's showing how well baked they are. You know, HTML5 is not done. Parts of it are, not all of it's baked. We're all kind of racing ahead and using things that are more or less baked. So let's take a quick look at the things that I'm going to focus on, and you can see where we are with IE10 on Windows Phone and where our competitors are with iOS, with Android, and with BlackBerry. Web storage is the name value pairs, lightweight. We've got it. We've got geolocation. We've got the audio, video, and canvas tag. XML HTTP requests, that's how you're going to do your AJAX calls. Web forms, I'm not going to go into it now, but things that you think of as a custom control, sliders, all kinds of things like that, those are actually new elements, form elements, when you build HTML forms. App cache, that's how you're going to have offline web pages. Web sockets, it's exactly what you think it is. It's a socket coming from a web page to a server. Web workers, those are multi-threading on a web page. Who knew? And then IndexedDB, it's a larger database that starts at the 50 meg size and goes larger. So a lot of these things, if you imagine a decision tree in your mind of what led you to build an app versus a web page, these things are changing now. And in some cases, maybe 50%, I don't know, you may find that you could do a mobile web app rather than a native app. IE10, let me give you some quick highlights. We've just ripped out the Chrome on the device. There's just nothing there. You see nothing but the content. We've hardware accelerated. We have this new GPU. The video, the text, the canvas drawing, all that is hardware accelerated with the GPU. We have this Chakra just-in-time compiled JavaScript engine. I mean, this thing is amazing. It was already fast. Now we JIT compile. So what does that mean? The JavaScript, which is the language, the code of the web, we now compile it to native code. So everything you're going to do is going to be dramatically faster and app-like. We've doubled the amount of HTML5 feature support over our last version of Windows Phone. And as I was focusing, like when I talked about Meep, about security at every tier, we've got it with the web as well. We brought the smart screen filter for real-time phishing detection from sites and to prevent you from malware from getting that, inadvertently downloading it. We also support the new sandbox, so that if you have an iframe, you know, you can't have like an untrusted iframe talking to a secure page and have something weird happen there. So great security story, great performance story. And then Andy talked about DataSense, which is a new technology. When DataSense when you're using your browser and going through DataSense, it's compressing all the images, the JavaScript, all kinds of things. So you have a dramatic reduction. And folks using, if you have a capped data plan that's for a certain size, like 1 gig, let's say, or whatever it is, in your different countries, if you've got DataSense turned on, we're estimating you should be able to surf to 50% more web pages, have 50% more data through our WebSense compression than you would without it. So it's a great money saver, especially if you think about, you know, if you have a capped data plan and it costs you to go over. So let's race through some of the different features. I'm going to just kind of rifle through some of the features that are HTML5. They're all in different working groups. So geolocation, Andy talked about that. It works on the web too. So your web applications are location aware. They absolutely tap into the same things. GPS outside, there's an IP address database out there that maps your IP address to a location. Wi-Fi, same kind of database. And then you fall back to cell tower triangulation. Obviously, you can also track your movements, just if you were like you were building a location-based app. The web can do that too. You can also use some trigonometry. You can measure distance between coordinates. And the other thing, though, is you can't be Big Brother and track people without a person saying, yes, it's okay. And so it pops up and requests the user's permission every time you want to do it. So grabbing a current position, this code really is that simple. Just navigate or geolocation, get current position. And then you can just I'm calling the little display function with that, and easily grabbing the lat and long to show a person where they are. You can pop that up in an alert. Tracking movements, I'm just going to have a watch ID variable. I mean, it's really scary how similar this is to the native code that you would do with your XAML and C# apps. And so you turn that on, and then you track them, you know, and it just keeps pulling back, and you can get that tracking location. You combine that with the online maps, and you have the same looking type of map control that you might have otherwise. I'm not going to go into this, but here's some code, and you get these slides, so you can just slam this code in. This will give you distance between any two coordinates anywhere on the globe. Web storage. If you need to do some offline data, but maybe less than 5 meg, just real simple stuff, we have this web storage. Works in every browser on every platform. So browser-based store, this is great stuff. Key value pairs, so just, you know, name, you know, a key, and then whatever. It could be a string, and the data stays there until you forcibly clear it. Then there's session storage, which is similar. That will go away when you close the browser, you know, or it could be on a tab by tab basis. This is something that's better than doing cookies, because remember, cookies not only can only do 4K, but you're sending that cookie data with every request and every response, so you're wasting bandwidth. Let's take a quick look. I'm going to race through this because I know we don't have a lot of time, and I know it's been really long 2 days for you guys. So web storage, it's just like cookies. Local storage dot set item, and then what the key, and then the value. So you can see different ways to do the same thing and how I can do an integer, or I can do an indexer to assign it. And then retrieving is just as simple. Just local storage get item by key. You know, and if I'm pulling out an int, I need to do parse int. I need to parse it to get into my value. And I can pull it out by indexer as well. And if I need to view contents of that, I can iterate through local storage, just doing a for loop, and then display those things real simply. So it's easy to access and get this data out. Oh, but there's more. It's not just simple strings or integers. I can put an array in storage. So I can have my car array and put in my Mercedes, Beamer, and Audi into an array, and then I can put that array into storage. One of my favorite things in JavaScript is JSON.stringify. It just takes any object or collection of objects and turns it into a string. So I can do that and then pull it back out again by doing JSON.parse, and it pulls it right back into my hydrated array. So that's pretty cool. Oh, but what if you want to do real objects? I mean, we've been talking about objects for the last 2 days now. Well, you know, objects in JavaScript are kind of funky looking, but you can still do them. So here's my car object, and I have my constructor with my parameters to make and a color. And so I create a new up a car object, a black Mercedes, and then I use the same JSON stringify to put that car object in and then pull it back out with parse. What if I put the two together? I don't want to say the words peanut butter and chocolate again like I did for mobile in the cloud, but what if I can do arrays of objects? So I have my car object, and then I put multiple car objects as different parts of an array. So I have my black Mercedes and a red BMW. I use the same JSON stringify to put that object array in and pull it out and hydrate it. I wonder why we might want to do that. Let's talk about web services. So we get to take advantage of the new XML HTTP request level 2 object to do those great AJAX calls. Your AJAX calls are going to be faster than the AJAX calls on the other phones because you have the just-in-time compiled Chakra JavaScript engine, which means your AJAX code is a zillion times faster. Okay, that's not very scientific. Anyway, and what have I been pounding on the last 2 days? REST plus JSON. It's the native language of the browser, and so it works everywhere. Lighter payload, you're going to use less bandwidth. If you're crunching through less data, that means, you know, you're not draining the battery. And the speed is faster. It's smaller. It comes back faster. Here's a simple AJAX call. You just new up the XML HTTP request object. And, you know, this is all asynchronous by default. You know, down here at the bottom, you do a GET request calling whatever the web service or REST service is, and then the onload function loads up, and if you get the 200, you're good to go, and then you have the request.response text, which is the response back from your web service. That could be the same stuff I showed you earlier when I used the web API with MVC4 with Meep. The web pages could be that same client as I showed you with the native apps. So then, if we go back to that display, that response that we got back, let's say we put it in this function. So now I can do JSON.parse. So the same JSON.parse I was using in the local storage, I can use that to parse the collection of objects, JSON objects, coming back from my web API service that I built in my Meep solution for the enterprise that was aggregating all that data. And then I just use a for loop to iterate through that, and then I've got something I can actually work with on my web page just like I was doing on my app. And so here's the next step of that. I'm pulling back a collection of objects, and now you understand why I thought it was important to show you how to do arrays of objects inside web storage. Because guess what? I can just, that natively just turns into that. So I can pull back a JSON object collection, and I can slam it right into local storage, into web storage. And then I can pull it back out and hydrate it, and I have my collection to work with. So the next thing you need to have, application cache, app cache. That's how we make web pages offline. Huge use case of why we went to apps in the past for native apps versus the web. The web's not always there. The network comes and goes. App cache now lets us not worry about that as much anymore. So what it does is it just lets you do offline browsing. You say these are the pages, these are the resources that I want to work offline. And not only is it good because you don't have to worry about the network, you're working offline, but it's always working. The app cache is always working, even if you're connected. It knows which ones are newer, and it'll load local web pages instead of reaching out to the web server. So this is all good, not only in offline, but it's good for user experience, even if you have connectivity. And then if you're not having to hit your web servers as often, then your web server will be more scalable. It can handle more load because you have fewer people beating up on it all the time. And so it's a simple text file. And let me just show you what that looks like. So you have this app cache manifest that you have with your website. And so here in the cache section, you just list the web pages and JavaScript files and images that you want to be offline. And then you have this fallback selection. You know, if a non-cache resources, that if you can't download it, then maybe go back to this other HTML page. And then in the network section, you can list things that you absolutely do not want to cache. This is a powerful feature. IndexedDB. So I talked about a lightweight name value pair database. If you need more storage, then we have IndexedDB. So it's object stores that are indexable, which is great stuff. If you've worked with Azure Table Storage or some other NoSQL databases out there, this will be very familiar to you. We also support, you know, identity columns, basically auto-incrementing keys locally. But it's not relational. Remember, it's like NoSQL. It's a table-by-table thing. Everything is transactional, and you can be asynchronous or not on this. And so it helps for the ACID support that you need. Anybody who knows about databases, you know that the browser, you know that your phone could run out of battery or something like that. So everything's transactional to make sure your data is durable and that your read-write options, things can roll back and things like that. Web workers. Every web page ever built has been single-threaded. If you have something going on too long, you sit there and wait, it looks like your browser froze. WebWorker API allows you to spawn different JavaScript files as separate threads asynchronously. And then you can have two-way asynchronous communication between the background thread and the main user interface. And so IE10 is going to let you have 25 active threads there. Here's simple how you do that, instantiating a new worker. You just point to one of your JavaScript files, so the logic that you want to run is encapsulated in the JavaScript file. And then here's kind of an example at the bottom, like sending a message to the web worker, posting message, and then an asynchronous event that fires on the worker that can get it. And they can talk back and forth to each other. So when the worker's done, it can marshal that data back to the UI and display what you need to do. So you have a great user experience. WebSockets. HP, we know it works everywhere. It's great. But if you need to do something super fast in real time and you don't want to just be polling with AJAX all the time, WebSockets truly lets you upgrade to a true socket, which is really fast, as you well know. And we support that on IIS 8 on our new Windows Server 2012. And you just have to, when you're going into the settings on IIS, you make sure you enable ASP.NET 4.5 and have the WCF HTTP activation enabled. So you can imagine all kinds of, you know, multiplayer games, real-time stock trading, push notifications. Another good feature, if you can't use WebSockets, take a look at SignalR. It's a great alternative to this, to do this over existing HTTP. And then here's kind of your basic, you know, if you want to establish a socket connection, you point to the host name, you create new up a socket with a host, and then it asynchronously fires open when we're in a ready state. And then you just start sending stuff, or you can serialize complex data. Last but not least, hybrid apps. Kind of alluded to those. We showed an example of that early on. It's an application that has a browser control in it. And so all the content is HTML rather than C# or VB. And so you use the app cache to keep it working. You know, you could have the web pages could be in isolated storage, or you could pull them down from a server and use app cache to work offline. And you could use IndexedDB as well if you want to. But you can do something really interesting. Your JavaScript can call functions written in C# to get to platform features that are not available to the web, and then vice versa. Your C# code on the platform can call JavaScript functions on your page. So you have this two-way communication from web pages. So if you have a lot of skill set around HTML and JavaScript, this might be a good route for you. And of course, it gets you in our store, because then you have an app. Even though it's all based on HTML and JavaScript, it's a real app, and it gets in our store. And if that's what you want for your discoverability, then that's a good way to go. So in review, these mobile web best practices, they're actually important. I know a lot of people just want to jump to the cool HTML5 stuff, but performance, usability, you know, scalability, being able to see things, you know, I don't know, call me crazy. User experience is a little bit important. Thank you for that. Yes. Obviously, these things are important in apps as well, but following these things are so important. You don't want people to just be just dying because your site takes so long to load. They will leave.
And also think of it this way. If you do not get a little bit crazy good at the UI side and understand how people use their devices and how they're using their apps, you see the other agency's going to come in and they're going to bring in their developers. So think of it that way. You need to be a little bit of a double or a triple threat in this world because or else the other side is going to bring in their people. That's how it runs the agency world today.
There you go.
It's really important for you to be able to know your stuff. And if you don't, partner with somebody, because I promise you, once you get it down, it really is that cartoon simple. If I can pull it off, anybody can pull it off. It's really not that hard.
User experience is the name of the game, mm-hmm. big time. And I guess what I'll just leave you with here is we do lots of these executive briefings, Teresa and I do. And time and again, we talk to CIOs, chief information officers of companies. They are looking for this silver bullet to deal with consumerization of IT, with BYOD. I want you to develop for Windows Phone. I also realize that your employees are going to bring in whatever phone they want. And that you got to reach out to your customers. A company has to reach out to prospective customers. They can't control what phone those are. But I can bring you home to our great IIS and our ASP.NET tools to build these great mobile websites that can reach out to these devices. So if CIO is looking for the silver bullet, HTML5 needs to be in your toolkit. We focused, 95% over the last 2 days on apps, but I just don't, HTML5 and what you have on IE10 on a platform definitely needs to be, part of your story. So happy that you've hung out with us for the last 90,000 hours. We're still alive. I hope you're still alive. Thanks for coming, Teresa. Andy, the whole this is great stuff. We've had a great time. I feel like we've gone over almost every time, haven't we?
It's been great.
Has it been great?
Awesome.
Thanks, Frank. You guys are great. This is good stuff. All right. Well, thanks for coming.
And don't forget to remind folks to vote.
Yes, we have a poll. We have a poll. What is the poll? Poll B4.
Poll B4.
Yes, before you leave.
Did
you like it? I hope you liked it. All right.
Thank you
very much. Bye-bye.
Have a good night.